The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 26th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Tony Fabrizi, CEO of Blue Star Capital, and Meinhard Ben, who's the CEO and founder of Satoshi Pay, talk about D-Transfer, which is their platform for instant cross-border payments for business. Also on the podcast, Paul Hill, full-time investor and equity analyst, gives his view on the markets, macro trends, including EV and oil. Plus, we mentioned the following stocks: Source Bio International, GlaxoSmithKline, or GSK, Aviva, Lloyds, and Taylor Wimpey. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk, and lots of other content. In fact, there's an article there on Gfinity, appointed as e-Premier League tournament operator for third year running. Also there is our COVID-19 index. Let's have a look. Biggest rise of the day is Gene Drive, up 11% to 55.5. Biggest faller, it is Fusion Antibodies, down 10% to £1. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Fabrizi, CEO of Blue Star Capital, BLU's ticker there, and Meinhard Ben, CEO and founder of Satoshi Pay. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Good to be here. Always good to be on the podcast.
Yeah, well, today we're going to focus on you, Meinhard, in a bit. Before we get into that in Satoshi Pay and what you're doing in D-Transfer, your main focus at the moment, Tony, for people not familiar with Blue Star Capital, again, give us a brief summary as to what you're all about, please.
Yeah, so Blue Star Capital is an investing company with two areas of primary focus. One is payments, which is the longer-term business we've been involved in, and more recently, in the last 15 months, esports, which obviously is a very exciting new area for us. But just focusing on Satoshi Pay today, Satoshi Pay is a blockchain business that we got involved in the beginning of 2017. We then made two further investments and took our stake to over 30%. And in fact, we tried to reverse Satoshi Pay into Blue Star in the middle of 2018, but timing wasn't great, and that didn't happen. But the good work we did around that time led the company to raise money successfully in 2019. And then since that time, the company has sort of broadened its focus away from the initial market, which is micropayments, where, you know, it was a great user case. But perhaps in retrospect, the market was a bit too early for us, and although the company's transacted over 1.4 million in payments, the market remains, you know, quite small. So, you know, 15 months ago, the company decided to seek a new focus and decided to move into B2B cross-border payments for companies. And unlike micropayments, this is a massive market. I think the fees generated annually are over 200 billion. So, you know, it's probably the largest payments channel globally. So, you know, the work that the company did in building the tech platform for the micropayments, has been extremely helpful and allowed them to build this new platform, you know, relatively quickly. So where they are today is going through alpha testing, hopefully soon starting beta testing. Initial signs, which Meinhard will cover, you know, extremely encouraging. And with very little marketing effort to date, they've already signed up 11 customers. So, you know, I think the opportunity here is, you know, is very significant for the company. So, perhaps I can pass over to Meinhard, to take it further.
Yes, very interesting, Meinhard. I was saying, we last spoke when you were talking about, you know, micropayments, like you say, very early, but a very exciting area. But now you're going to D-Transfer, which I know is already a massive market right there. You don't have to create that market. It's right there. So can you just explain that again, underline what D-Transfer is all about, if you could?
Absolutely. So, yeah, the technology that we've built for the micropayments business is quite versatile. We always build it as a platform, so we use it to different markets and also to different types of payments. Just wanted to mention, like, recently, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web, has mentioned Satoshi Pay positively in a speech, and that's obviously a huge endorsement for what we're doing. And it gives us more power also to focus on our instant money transfer business, which D-transfer at the core really is, with a focus on businesses. So we're doing B2B instant money transfer, and this is, of course, still based on the blockchain, and more specifically the Stellar blockchain. And we're using blockchain here to replace the old system of correspondent banking, which makes it more cheaper. Essentially, the transactions are a lot cheaper. They're faster. Within 30 seconds, we can transfer from one bank account in one country to another one in a different banking system in another country. And we focus on being an instant and open service like blockchain itself and generating value there. And we're doing a lot of pioneering work here with building up an ecosystem for different corridors where, you know, sometimes there isn't really the infrastructure yet, but we can bridge that and enable that with blockchain technology.
Yeah. And you recently did a video update, which I'm sure people can see online there, but can you explain the update you've done, please?
Yes, so I think this was well awaited. For a few months, we've been very busy building out D-Transfer, coming up with a name, building branding, building the actual software and the initial service behind it. So we were kind of sort of in our workshops and we're very busy. And now we came really public with this and shared some information. Also, obviously, we had to deal with the fallout of COVID and what that has done to the world and also to all different industries. And on the upside there, we had a bit of savings through reduced costs, and this extended our runway. Also, the recent uptick in crypto was quite helpful for us. We also have in our treasury some crypto assets, so that helped us, and we're kind of managing them quite well. And so there's no immediate need for funding right now. However, we are looking we're looking to raise next year sometime. And also I was getting into our relationship with the Stellar Foundation, which is the foundation behind the blockchain network that we use. And they also invested in us in May 2020 in a very difficult market condition, but they really helped us out there. So that was great. And they helped us in so many ways. So it's a very fruitful partnership with this multi-billion-dollar foundation that's based in San Francisco.
Tell us about the cross-border payments. Tell us about the size of the market here, and the opportunity, and what's there at the moment, and what will you replace, kind of thing.
Yeah, so as Tony already mentioned, it's a huge market with $200 billion in fees alone. So this is just transaction fees, and that's really what we are addressing. The opportunity is that 90% of this market is dominated by commercial banks, which aren't really known for innovative services, I would say, always, at least the incumbents. And businesses are sometimes frustrated with how international bank transfers work. So there's really a lot of room to improve. So you have things like transfers even getting lost or being slow, taking a few business days or sometimes weeks when they get lost. The fact that money can get lost or kind of no one knows where it is at a certain point of time is quite frustrating. And this whole process is intransparent, and especially young business owners, SMEs, are used to instant apps and having a full control over their finances at all time. And that's really something that we are bringing to the business world. And we offer more competitive transaction fees. Our service is instant, as I mentioned, so within less than a minute we can transfer from one bank account to another. And we sort of have a payment tracing mechanism as well, similar to a parcel. You always know where your payment is at what point in time. And that's really a huge, opportunity. And we already see this when talking to customers. They are coming to us. They are definitely looking for better solutions.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds excellent. And obviously, it sounds like a better option than what's there at the moment. But where are you in your journey to commercialize this? Is it happening at the moment? What's going on?
Yes, so even like Tony mentioned, without much marketing, without much sales, or just initial campaigns, we've reached 11 clients, or we've signed 11 clients, and combined they have an annual transaction volume of what they want to transfer through our service of 84 million already, and this is growing. So this is with each new market and each new corridor between these markets that we open, we can easily sell. This is really such a vast market that it really is quite easy to grow in our sense, and the market is hungry for our solution. And we are in a closed beta service at the moment for selected clients, and we are moving into a closed service for more selected clients quite soon. And this is kind of to control also how we are growing and what features we want to add. We're very, very close with our clients, and we have very in-depth conversations and trying to help them the best way possible.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And what's your ambition then, Meinhard? Where do you hope to take this?
So we're very confident about the future, and recent months have shown us that it's an absolute opportunity that we found some great, not even a niche, but a great market to grow in. And our vision is to capture only 0.1% of the market share, which already, given the size of the market, makes us a unicorn in terms of valuation. So that's something we're working towards too.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And like I say, we've seen Bitcoin and other cryptos rally strongly of late. I mean, like you did mention it, but that can't harm you, can it?
No, absolutely. Yeah, that's this. I was always a strong believer from day one in blockchain and Bitcoin, and I knew this will come back, and now it's happening. And of course, it raises attention here and really kind of lays out a great ground for us to grow, also to make people listen to what there is out in blockchain that can be used in their specific business. So, yeah, it's very, very positive for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. Good to chat to you, Meinhard. And Tony, back to you for the three reasons. If someone's liking the sound of this and not yet following the story, give them those three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Blue Star Capital to their watch list, please.
Okay, Justin. So obviously, first of all, Satoshi Pay, I mean, hopefully, by now I was explaining, you know, this is a great opportunity for us. We own 28% of Satoshi Pay, so you know, it's a significant stake for us. Carrying our books at only 17 million valuation. So if the company can deliver anything like what we believe is possible, then obviously that valuation is going to look very, very small going forward. Secondly, Dynasty, which is our platform play in the world of esports and gaming. This company's got off to an absolutely tremendous start. It's only been going 15 months, already delivering well above expectations. Two massive contracts already, and we own 13% of Dynasty, so we have great hopes for that company. And then finally, just in terms of esports, we have, you know, a portfolio of seven companies across esports. It's a unique play in this fast developing market, and you know, we think that should bring a lot of attention and a lot of value to us.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also, I suppose, what's been highlighted through coronavirus in this pandemic is that esports was growing anyway, but it's been accelerated, and it's very much, you know, it's immune, isn't it, from this? People play it at home, they don't have to go out and mingle with people, so it's not really affected so much, is it?
It's very difficult to see what will stop this, to be honest, Justin. I mean, it's just got an awful lot of positives about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're very early on in these companies, so we've got big stakes. And as we've seen with Guild, which came to market recently, you know, we've done incredibly well there. And, you know, I think there's a long way to go.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Guys, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now and on video, by the way, you can see this on YouTube. And if you want the next one to your inbox, hit the subscribe button and notification bell, is Paul Hill, equity analyst, full-time investor. You all right, fella?
Yeah, morning, Justin. We may be on Sky, later on, if we're on video.
Yeah, well, do you know what I find odd? I've been talking about this, the markets. I see choppiness happening, you know, because what we've got, and I described this before, as a Titanic gap. And that's the gap between the vaccines, the rescue boats coming in, and just basically worse data coming out, infections growing in America now. There's a lot more restrictions happening in this country. We're coming out of, well, today we're going to find out, apparently, that you know, what restrictions areas are going into. So we're going to have a lot of bad data, I think, over the next month or so before we see any effect from the vaccines, you know. So it's almost like you've got to hold your nerve here. Or either top up if there's opportunities. It's going to be a bit volatile for the next month. So, but I think we have a Santa rally, though, you know?
Oh, yeah. And also, I think we have had probably a large part of a Santa rally already. I mean, if you look at an index that small cap investors should really concentrate on is not AIM. AIM is sort of like disjointed because it's top heavy with the likes of Boohoo and ASOS. And I think ChiMed, which is a big medical business out in China. So have a look at the index to look at for small caps against your benchmark is the SMXX, which is all small cap companies excluding investment firms. And that has actually moonshotted about 20% since the first good Pfizer vaccine news, over the 20%. So, and what's happened is that it's lifted all boats, but some boats deserve to be lifted and others don't. And that is where the stock-picking expertise needs to come in.
Yeah, but do you know what I would say, though? I got really too caught up in the macro, you know, at the start of the year. I, well, like others, I missed the aggressive bounce because I just thought, no way is this the market going to bounce. And it did, like, phenomenally. And I suppose when everyone tries to predict the market, it does the opposite thing. And I think what I've learned from that is focus on your own stocks. Focus on the own sectors you're in. Don't worry about indices and indexes, unless you buy funds, I suppose. But and as soon as I started doing that and stopped focusing on the macro numbers, it's good to have a top-level view of that and where you see things and certain trends happening and all that. But don't get too worried about that, because we know it'll play out fine. If you've got a company that's fundamentals are going to improve over the next 12 months, two, 3 years maybe, that's where you should focus on. Just keep researching the companies you're in or more companies, and not too much, because you can't do anything about the macro anyway. You can't do anything about it,
Yeah, well, but turn the clock back sort of 7 or 8 months, and what was the trigger for the huge rally? It was the Fed, the Bank of England, and the ECB stepping up to the plate and deciding they're going to do unprecedented levels of fiscal and monetary stimulus. And nobody had ever seen that at all, ever in history. And that was what was causing the fear. The bond market went into totally frozen. Nothing was moving whatsoever. And it was that central bank action that actually de-blocked all of the bond market that then allowed the equities to rally. So I don't think you've got to concentrate on the top-level macro, but that was the trigger for the actual stock market rally. There was fundamental change in monetary policy and fiscal policy that boosted stocks and bonds. Everything went up. It isn't just looking at the macro, it's actually looking at what the triggers were. And most investors
most investors will never look. You are a deep analyst, right? You look at the deep stuff. And most investors, they don't do it full time. They haven't got time to do that. And I think it comes out of this. It's as simple as this. When people are really scared, you buy. That's it. And that's what Warren Buffett said. When there's blood in the streets, you buy a little bit. If you had a time horizon, is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, 10 years, you buy. If you're a trader, of course, you've got to sell and all that stuff, but trading is hard, I wouldn't do that. As an investor, keep it simple. I should realize that. When that gauge, that fear and greed index, that was a 2. I've never seen that before. It was a 2. There's one lower than that, that's all. And they said, when it's down that level, no one else is selling. Everyone else pretty much sold because they're all scared. That's the time you just pick up stock, And any stock you could have bought in that sell-off would have been doubled by now, and the good ones have done a lot more than that, I just think keep it simple.
The thing is, you can take that approach. However, you've got to understand what is actually triggering it, okay?
You can't control it.
Okay, I'll just give you an example, Justin, You've got a whole bunch of stocks. You put them into relevant buckets, stuff that wouldn't get over the COVID void, if basically without central bank support at all, and those will. And if you concentrate on the stocks that can get over on their own, momentum, then yes, you've got no problem. But let's just say most people have a portfolio of, say, 10, 15, 20 stocks. And let's push the clock back to where it was at the beginning of March or mid-March. And you've got 4 or 5 of those, which would definitely not will go bust if it doesn't get central bank support. What do you do? And you basically, what you're saying is that regardless, you buy. And that would have been the right call, okay? Only if you'd betted on hope that the central bank was going to basically push the monetary button. And you were betting on somebody else doing something else to get those companies that would go bankrupt over the void. Unless that played out perfectly, but it doesn't always happen.
No, but the thing is, that's always going to happen, because you've got a bad scenario and a worst case scenario. Now, if you do nothing, you're going to head for the worst case scenario. You're going to have millions of people unemployed for years and years and years. It's like right now, the government, like Rishi Sunak, doing the spending plan, being very generous, but essentially the government are an investor in the economy. They get taxes off people. That's how they exist. That's good times, go to the deficit. So I thought myself, how can the government make money off this, invest in business? Well, they sort of are, they are, because it's tax receipts they get from that. Now, if everyone's business goes through, they'll support them, they'll not get any tax receipts for years and years, or it'll be massively down. Now, if they support all the businesses and get them back on their feet for the next 12 months, the tax receipts will go back up. So they have to do that. So there's a bad scenario and a worst case scenario. The bad scenario is pumping loads of money in and, you know, hopefully get the economy back up. The worst scenario is doing nothing. Now, what are you going to do? So, you know, you've got to go one of two ways. You've got to really pump the money into it to get the economy back on its feet, or ignore it, and you'll have like 10 years of literally, you know, sort of like the 1930s, you know. So that's what you do. So, of course, you know, there's certain, of course, there's certain businesses you shouldn't go into anyway. But, you know, let's be honest, I think there are businesses like, for example, Cineworld. Let's give an example of that. That I wouldn't invest in beforehand anyway. I just think it's only going to be a massive growth. They had big debt. They're buying up. It's not an attractive proposition anyway, Cineworld. So when you get trouble, companies like that in trouble, that could have been in trouble in 5 years' time anyway, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the rationale you've just described, yeah, is using fundamentals, which is exactly the right approach. So we're on the same page. The point I was trying to actually, you know, make was if you just base it on the relative sentiment index, the RSIs, which as you're saying, the fear index. Yes, it's a good indicator of when to buy, but you've got to back it up with the view that you bet on the central banks providing the support, which is actually the correct way of doing it, not just saying, oh, everybody's selling, so I'm going to buy. You've got to have a basic.
I the genius is in simplicity. As humans, we inherently want to make things more complicated. If you look at investing, you see why so many people don't get involved in investing. There's every metric under the sun. You can look on websites, you can get these sort of silly metrics of, you know, EBITDA times something, 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 extrapolated, real terms, and it just puts people off. And it essentially comes down to, look at this business. Is it a business you like? Are you excited by it? Is it growing? Is it doing well? And, you know, and then try and value it. But you know what? I got into stocks, and I've analysed stocks sometimes at a silly level, you know, really dug down into everything, and I'm going beyond, you know, the assets and all that stuff. And in the end, it doesn't matter. I've seen stocks 10 bag that you would never think 10 bag. And I thought, do you know what? I've overanalyzed this. And so the average Joe in the street will never look at the bond markets. Like, so you said the thing to look at is the bond markets. They'll never look at that because it's boring. And I don't understand it myself, pretty much. So I just want to invest in a company that can go to the moon. That's what I want to do. And do you know what? I think the more we try and keep it simple, the better we'll do. And I've overcomplicated it. Whenever I've overcomplicated investments, I've always come off worse, pretty much, because you know what? Sometimes it's gut level, and you like a company, think this is very popular, because you see it's popular, and you look at, you know, you look at the most basics of all. Look at revenue growth. Don't worry too much about, you know, profit growth at the start. If you have big revenue growth, going top line figures, always there. One of the first things they'll show is revenue growth. That's a good sign. And then you can go down in margins if you want that, or the margins and all that stuff. But that again is complicating it. I think if anything, as humans, Google, right? They killed it with their search engine. Do you know why? Because everyone else was filling up their front page with links, you know, pictures, this or that, finance here, entertainment here. Google came along with a search box and hit the search button. They won. You know what? They kept it simple. And if we can do that as investors, keep it simple, well, we'll do a lot better. We overcomplicate it, and we don't even know we're doing it. We try and add to it. The more we learn, the more we complicate things, the more we make it harder for ourselves.
I'm absolutely on the same page. Keeping it simple makes, you know, a good and clear investment.
No, but you know, you're an analyst. You love digging deep into things. And you know what? It does you well. But sometimes, how many times have you been put off by an investment on a minor issue, which you see as a minor issue now, but at the time you thought that's quite important? And then you look back and the stock price has gone up like 3 or 4 times. And you think, oh, maybe that wasn't such a big deal because everyone else doesn't look that deeply, you know? And so, okay, because I've been worried about investments. And I thought, why did I even worry about that? You know, most of the mistakes I made is that a stock has rallied and it's rallied, and it's overvalued. Do you know what? Don't worry too much about valuations. There are always plenty of private investors that will pay more for a stock than you will. Always, pretty much. So, you know, I mean, obviously you can get to a certain extreme, but I mean, I've been, you can be really, you know, tinker on the edges on things that aren't important, you know, I think sometimes. And I just think it's hard for every human. We all try to complicate things to try and keep it simple. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the last bit on this, I mean, all I would say is that equally, don't just buy if things have gone down, because the definition, a definition of a stock that is 95% down, yeah, is a stock that was 90% down and halved. So you can lose a lot of money by basically buying dog stocks. They're continued falling traps. And so you've got to have a reason, and your simple approach to keeping it basically clear, concise, and to the salient facts makes a lot of sense. But have a thesis rather than just a hunch.
Yeah, no, I've got a thesis. I've got a 9-point plan that I go through pretty much every time I look at a stock. But the basis of that pretty much is scalability, growth, and also it's valuation, and that's then underpinned by price pretty much. But I've seen people confuse, a market capitalization with price. I've seen people on Twitter saying share price is going down. This is cheap. Just because the share price has gone down doesn't make it cheap. Exactly. People, you have to sort of relatively know. When I ever look at a stock, I do try and work out, okay, if they're earning this much, what's the multiple? Is that cheap or expensive, or what? Or how big can they scale this? That kind of thing, But I've got to be excited by a business as well, because we are buying businesses at the end of the day. And sometimes I just get excited. I buy into a business on the metrics alone, and the business bores me. I think, oh, I'm not really into this business, and I sell. So anyway, let's look at specific news. Any company news out? By the way, I want to talk about Source Bio, because I was talking on the podcast with Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare of SP Angel. And we talked about COVID testing stocks. And I just said something, a bit silly, controversial. I said, COVID testing won't be here by Easter. It'll be done. All gone, pretty much. I said, it'll be, the hype around that has gone. And Vadim argued with me, he said, no, it'll take a lot longer. I said, if we get three at the moment, vaccines out. But if we get, I don't know how many of the big guys are out there, but 5 or 6 good vaccines in the Western world that work. So if they work, big if they, and if we distribute them properly and as quickly as they say we can, and the mass of the population are vaccinated by, before summer, why do we need vaccines if they're working? If there is effective
testing, you mean why do you need COVID testing?
Why do you need testing? Sorry, and of course, Source Bio, their figures are amazing on this. I didn't realize this, and we were talking about companies. And the difference is as well. I said, no, I'm talking about companies. If you're invested in a company who hasn't got a commercial testing kit out there already doing the business, it's a bit worrying because the window is closing. The opportunity now, Source Bio is killing it already. So is Novacyt. So those two, and also they've got other things. I mean, Source Bio has got lots of other legs of business, and that's not. But
just to answer that question, Justin, very good question. Okay, we had the CEO of Qantas Airlines made a statement. I think it was on Monday. So this is a pretty heavy hitter, okay, in the transport and leisure industry. He said he will insist. And this is basically a worldwide airline. He will insist every international passenger next year has to basically have immunity, to COVID. Has got to basically either be vaccinated. Now, if you've been vaccinated, you will also need to have an antibody test, okay? Because that'll tell you whether your vaccination has worked. You've got sufficient antibodies to travel. So when it comes back to antibody testing, i.e., are you immune? You will need is if you ever want to go a holiday on an international travel with Qantas, and you can guarantee that the IATA, which is the international travel, will adopt that policy, across the patch. Yeah. So yes, there will be antibody tests. Now, when it comes to antigen testing, in terms of have you actually got the COVID disease, then you're going to get it again in such that you're not perhaps not as much. But if people want to basically go into homes, etc., you might well find that, people or go into areas that have got sort of COVID testing, you might well find that you need to basically be clear that you haven't actually got COVID. So, yeah, I still think you will definitely need COVID testing. Antibody will definitely be required. An antigen will probably be required as well. It won't be as much as it is at the moment, because we just don't need to test every single person in the population. But it'll still be ongoing, particularly for specific instances where you have contact locations, An antibody will definitely happen, and an antigen will, but just will be less than it is currently.
I think it'll still be around. What I'm saying is, if these vaccines are distributed by, Matt Hancock, I don't have much respect for anyway, said we'll be back to normal by Easter. Now he's trying to obviously big that up and get that plan ahead, and he's failed on many times before. But let's say we are back to normal by Easter, and let's say 60% of the population are vaccinated. Then those tests will be coming back, pretty much negative a lot. The policy is always up for change. That guy from Qantas, whatever, or the airlines will say, well, you don't want to keep testing people because most people are vaccinated now, and we are not getting in much, occurrence or infection rates are not very high. So it's a waste of money for us or them. So they will change that policy, because if vaccinations work and they're that effective and they're that distributed, they won't need them.
But if the worldwide airline body says that
they'll change it. I mean, people will go back to flying very quickly. Behavioural change. You see it in the stock market. The stock market can go from being the most bearish one day and was bullish the next day. People's sentiment changes overnight, and even though you're so entrenched, you think it can't, it does. And I've seen it so much. You know, we've been in. Sometimes I feel really bearish, and the next day I feel bullish. You know, and that's the way behaviors change very quickly in that.
Yeah, respect. And then the other thing, you can actually repurpose a lot of this, and testing to do other infectious diseases. Because I think it's been a disaster, obviously, this year in terms of human life and tragedy. But actually, it's fundamentally improved certain areas. Mm. I mean, for instance, medical science has proved that rather than 5 to 10 years to develop a vaccine, they can do it in 10 months. And that's using technology like, you know, mRNA, yeah, which is the Moderna and the, you know, basically the Pfizer stuff and the BioNTech. Now, that can be utilized in lots and lots of different areas. So effectively, when it comes to sort of testing immunodiagnostics, you could find that actually a lot of this testing capability can be repurposed and used in leading edge sciences. So what I'm saying is it ain't going to be scrapped. And
it's not. But my focus pretty much, maybe I didn't articulate it very well, was that be careful if you're investing in a company whose main focus is COVID testing and they haven't got a commercial product already selling. Because, like I said, when I invest in a company, I want to know, is it improving over 12 months, 3 years, 5 years? You know, I don't want to know, will it be around in 12 months if I'm lucky? That's not the way. But if you're a company that's one art, like SourceBio, for example, that's just one part of their business, isn't it? Maybe you know more about them than me. But lots of the part. And at the moment, that part of the business is booming. Yes. But they've got other parts of the business, you know? So that's.
Well, I mean, just to give you an indication with SourceBio, I mean, their biggest shareholder, Chris Mills, who's one of the smartest in small cap and medium cap, has been buying shares on the market. He already has 29%, so he believes in the story. And one of the reasons they could really benefit next year is that I understand they are negotiating with all the big vaccine makers to be able to store the vaccines next year ahead of the sort of like the autumn and the winter season, whether it's the mRNA vaccines that need to be frozen, or equally whether it's the AstraZeneca, which can be put into chills, because they have basically healthcare grade storage, chillers and freezers in Ireland, the UK and the US, just where these vaccines are being made. So they could actually just make, you know, hand over fist from that division next year, just on the
vaccine. That's clever, though. That's clever, because they are along the chain there, you know. They're really at the start of the chain, the testing chain, the vaccine part of the chain, they've got that as well. So that's very clever. They've got other parts of this.
Yeah. And the other thing that they just announced in the trading update, they just won a big cancer screening framework contract with the NHS. And we've got millions and millions of people who haven't been able to have elective surgeries. So we've got that. And yesterday, Rishi Sunak already announced £4 billion to try and get over that hump of, the backlog of elective surgeries and stuff. So they're in a lovely sweet spot. The base business is going to do well over the next 5 years, which more than underpins the share price. And anything more they get on the antigen PCR testing is just perfect jam, you know. It's just basically icing on the cake. And we're still going to need antigen testing into early next year, no doubt about it, you know. And that's what the NHS that's why it is booming, because we still need it. So you've got, that's all optionality to me. So SourceBio. One thing on the other side of the flip side, I know you and I have discussed quite a lot GSK, and I've liked Glaxo, okay, because it's cheap. And I think, look, and when I compare it to Astra, but actually what's really sort of come to light, and it's sort of like now I understand why the shares are in the doghouse, is that because it's got a big vaccine division, it's all old science. You compare it to the mRNA, you know, the mRNA science that they've just been developed. It just means that, you know, the efficiency rates of their old vaccine technologies are sort of like 50 to 60, 70%. Now this new technology does 90, 95%. That's why the shares have performed so badly, is that actually they are, even though they're the world's biggest vaccine maker, they are a long way behind in technology terms, and they're going to really struggle in 5 years' time. So I can absolutely now understand why investors saw the weakness in the business model. And it's a shame, because I think they're a great company, and they do look cheap, but I think that's cheap for a reason, because future cash flows are going to be hit badly because of new technology that's come out of the COVID world.
Yeah. Do you know what? Talking about that, the vaccine, it is interesting, actually, because if you look at it, even though the well, efficacy rate. We don't really know with AstraZeneca at the moment which one it is. It's really odd. The half dose and the full dose a month between works better than they said. They make a system with a booster to start. Works better than the full dose. Full dose. But if the efficacy rate is still like 70%, which is amazing, better than the seasonal flu anyway, generally, that's 40 to 60%. That is the one that's the game changer, isn't it? Because, like I said, they don't need to have all this extra cold supply chain, you know, that and of course, AstraZeneca is going to produce a couple of billion or three doses, 2.5 billion or 3 billion doses. So that's the real game changer. It's cheaper. And of course, there's don't need that cold supply chain, which is a thing. But it'd be interesting to see. I think, honestly, next week or the week after, we'll have regulatory, you know, passes
for approvals.
Yeah, approvals. It'll help the market again, but again, we're going to get this choppiness and we'll have bad figures, more infections. America's infections are going through the roof, it's nuts. And of course, wherever their market goes, ours tends to follow a little bit. In fact, ours follows down, doesn't tend to follow up. It's like, underperforms very well, it doesn't overperform at all.
It comes back to the first point you made, you know, buy stocks, not indices, okay? Certainly, we've had such a hard rally in those epicenter stocks. You know, when we've talked about Tom Lee out in Fundstrap, and he's been recommending that we just buy anything that looks remotely beaten down and recovery stocks across all. And that's what's happened, yeah? But certain stocks justify it and others don't. So, for instance, ones which don't would be the hotel stocks. They are back to their 2020 highs at the start of the year, and they're closed. They've been closed, the hotels are, but that's the stocks are saying they're back and they're going to be able to trade, even though they've taken a shed load of debt. So I wouldn't be going anywhere near those. I wouldn't be going anywhere near the airlines either. Cineworld, which you pointed out, again, I'd prefer other spaces. But a stock that I have bought, as in Lightyear earlier, and are very happy to hold, is one which came out, is Insurer Aviva, which came out with Q3 results this morning. Now, they have just reinstated their dividend, their full-year dividend, at 21p. The shares are at £3.25, gives you a dividend yield of about 6.5%. Now, how do you value a business like, you know, basically Aviva? It's just come through the worst crisis in mankind, yeah? With all the potential claims for business interruption and all that sort of stuff. And it's come through relatively unscathed. The balance sheet is fine. And it's going to resume dividends, etc. Now, the way I look at this on a valuation, it's not an exciting business. It's basically something that is going to, you know, it's been massively undervalued. And I would treat it a bit like a utility, okay? Now, I know you don't like terminology, but I would use and this is for investors who are a bit more interested in valuation, a dividend growth model, yeah? And I would assume a cost of equity of about 8%. Its bonds, I know you don't like bonds, its bonds trade at 4.3%, and it paying a dividend of 6.5%, but the dividends are said to go up about low single digits. So I would say you would value that at about roughly 20 times net dividend, using the dividend growth model. And that would come as a minimum of £4. I know, yeah. A minimum of £4.20.
It's to me, Aviva, I won't invest in it because it's boring. There's nothing, there's no release. I know Warren Buffett said boring, you've got to invest in boring stocks. No, I don't want that. I mean, you don't have to invest in boring stocks at all. You can invest in stocks actually, you know, with stories that you enjoy. Aviva's got no story you can sell to me. Sell me the story. Don't tell me about his, you know, discounted dividend model or net tangible asset value. I don't care.
Okay,
it's boring,
okay.
But I'm never going to put my money in that because, do you know what? I know the next bit of news that comes out from them. I'm not going to say, wow, that's good. That's exciting. That's why I like small cap stocks with a good story. And,
Justin, I love boring stocks when they can generate 100% return in 12 months. Just give me more boring stocks.
But they don't generally. And do you know what? Exciting stocks generate more than that. Look at my returns of the last, you know, say 3 years even. You know, even since since 2009, my portfolio's gone up by 4,600% by investing in exciting stocks with good stories that I'm really passionate about. I enjoy, and I look forward to updates. There's no update from Aviva I will ever look forward to. It'll just come out with a load of text about nonsense, and I'm not interested in. Bore the sense of me. Sell.
You sound like Jim Cramer on CNBC.
Well, Aviva, come on, it's boring. Why should anyone? I mean, unless you're a fund and you're investing for pensions, why? Come on.
The only reason why I like it is it's significantly still undervalued. And just for anybody who has invested alongside me, I value it between a minimum of 420 and a top of about 550, and that's using on a price to book ratio. So it's somewhere about 470. The shares are still 320, 325. I have a lot to run. I've made a lot of money so far on it. I'm very happy to make another 50% on it. And if it bores the pants off anybody, it doesn't bore the pants off me because
I'm sitting pretty. I tell you what's useful. If you suffer with insomnia, get the annual financial report. get into bed at night, start reading through that. You'll be nodding off very quickly.
Okay, well, if you want to get basically more insomnia and even a thicker annual report, read Lloyd's' one. Because their shares have gone from 25p to 36 in about 3 weeks. And again,
this is why the only reason why they're exciting is banks is like they'll take a big hit and you know it'll sink for a while and you can chuck a bit of money in thinking Lloyd's never going to go through, it's fine. You can chuck a bit. That's exactly what I did. That's why I made good money on the financial crisis. I basically chucked all the money I had into Lloyd's and it kept going down. I kept chucking more in to the point where I literally, and you know what? Normally I said these companies are boring, but I had so much money in it, I was sweating going to bed at night, waking up worrying about my money. That was the only excitement I got from it. But luckily, I did quite well from it.
You did brilliantly. I think they went from about sort of 20p to 70p, didn't they? 75p at the top or something.
Yeah.
So anyway, if I could make 50 to 100,
That's how you make Aviva and Lloyd's exciting. You just chuck all your money in it, all of it. You know, just sit there. Right, go on, buy low.
Okay.
Seller.
Well, and another one which has been extremely boring, but frankly has made me a shed load of money over the last 3 weeks is one of the house builders, Taylor Wimpey. Because that's up 60% in 3 weeks, and frankly, if I add all those three together, you know, I could probably buy your house, mate. So in profit, so I'm pretty sort of bored, but very happy with what they've done. But I believe there's plenty of upside in any of those.
Yeah, no, it probably is. But again, do you know what? Like I said, I keep going back to the point where I'm buying businesses pretty much. I'm buying a share of a little business. And I've got to be quite excited about it and passionate about that business. Otherwise, because you're an investor in a business, you know, that's what it is. And that's why I like small caps, because they've got a story and nothing more powerful than the story. You know, it conquers everything. And a good story, people. And that's why you say, why have the hotels risen? It's sentiment. You know, the sentiment is based on stories and people saying it's going up. And it's, you know, so you can knock away all those, you know, metrics, evaluation metrics, and throw them away. And so at the end of the day, it's been battered down. And like I said, will you wait now? I've been saying it for months. I said, listen, now's the time to get into those, you know, quality stock sectors and be knocked down. And just, you don't need to do a lot of research, actually. You just wait because you know this time next year the economy will be back open. We'll be back to normal, but the stock markets are probably higher on those sectors than they were before they went in because there'll be so many people buying into them, it'll push them all up.
Here's a question for you then, which is not that boring. It can be boring if you want to look at the big boys, but you guys, I mean, you understand a lot of the sort of the smaller plays. What is happening with oil? Is that a value trap? Or is that basically an opportunity? It's now, Brent is trading at $48 per barrel. It's moonshotted from about 35, yeah? And the oil stocks have absolutely rocketed around the world, big cap, small cap. So would you like to sort of throw the dice on a few oil stocks, given the rally? Or what would you do with that, the oil?
Not now. I said in the weekend podcast about a month back, I said, in those sectors, you know, your banking, your hospitality, your leisure, your travel, you can put oil in that as well, because that will rally as well. As soon as the economy opens back up, of course, more people will be using oil. And it's been oversold, pretty much. It's a technical bounce, isn't it? But the difference is, when I'm investing now, I'm looking for trends and themes. Themes are getting stronger over the next 3 to 5 years, 10 years. You know, like something in the world, like, for example, I tell you what's a theme I've got. I own Gfinity, for example. That's esports. It's getting bigger and faster every year, okay? And I know this because my kids, all they want to do is play games, or they watch gamers playing games. That's all they want to do. They don't watch TV. And that's getting bigger, and you can see the money pouring into it from all the big players. That's a theme that will be round and get more popular. As, you know, quality of games get better, they get faster, there's more people coming into it. So that's a theme. Now, oil, in my mind, is a theme that's probably with us now for what? I'd say, where's peak oil is not too far away, you know, because they're talking about 30% of the world's cars by 2030 on EV. And it won't get to that before oil starts to really tank, I don't think. But I think it'll rally because, of course, there's been lack of investment going into exploring because everyone's pulling the money out of oil. You know, all big divestments like Norwegian Sovereign Fund and all that, they won't touch it anymore. So basically, it's not a long-term trend anymore, oil. You will have a technical bounce, and it may go up for a while because, you know, once demand goes up, or it's still steadily creeping up, I think, 2% a year. Once that tops off and they're not putting money in the ground to get it out of the ground, of course, the price will go nuts, I think, for a while. I think the price of oil will go absolutely berserk in a while. But how long will it stay up there for? You know, it's a pop and drop, I think, pretty much. That pop and drop may be over 2 or 3 years. But sooner or later, we know the theme for oil is not good. You know, it's not good at all, is it?
Well, hey, it's quite interesting, actually, because I think we've just had a first. We both agree. I mean,
I think, at the moment, I'm fishing around for explosives.
Yeah. Can I just add? Because I'm absolutely on the same page as you. And the whole sort of the oil complex, etc., the decline in it has been accelerated by COVID, and that's one of the beneficiaries: decarbonisation, renewables, hydrogen power. Basically wind, solar, electric vehicles, all that sort of stuff is going to be a massive... The amount of investment going into it is huge. And I would say that whole sector, and I know it's obvious, but has just been... It's like effectively work from home or work from anywhere trend has just been massively accelerated. So that's where if you want to go into energy, would concentrate your efforts, is those long-term trends that's going to be here until 2050 if we're ever going to sort of like fully neutralise the carbon footprint of the population.
Yeah. The biggest trend of all right now, and I don't know any trend bigger than this, okay, is electric vehicles. That is massive. That's the most popular sector of the alternative, you know, to petrol, diesel.
Yeah.
There are hydrogen. And in fact, one of the stocks I held was a hydrogen sort of stock. It went bananas. I was quite an early adopter of it. It went up a little bit. I just got out. I thought it was going to take a long time to commercialize. All of a sudden, it five-bagged in the next 2 months after I sold it, which annoyed me. Anyway, I've just bought one share of a company right involved in the EV space because there's no bigger trend than that. There's no one policy every government in the world is behind, pretty much, apart from this. And that is basically they're stopping the selling of of petrol and diesel cars 2030, right about there. That is massive. It's every government in the world, pretty much, apart from North Korea or somewhere. But, I mean, you don't get bigger than that. So, at the moment, I bought one share of a company exposed to this.
Who have you bought?
I'm not going to say, because it's too expensive. I don't give any... I'd be silly to tell people to buy up here because it's gone nuts.
You're not telling people to buy. I'd just be interested to know.
No, I'm not saying because I want to, when it comes down.
You're a tease, Justin.
When it comes down, I think it's at a reasonable level. Then I'll talk about it because. But as yet, and again, this is a company I got really excited about 6 months ago, and then all of a sudden it doubled overnight. And I thought I was a bit slow there, wasn't I? I was one of these people I was doing research, but I think it'll still come back because they've got a way to go until they commercialize this. They have a plan to commercialize it, but it's in that trend. It's right standing in front of the trend of EV, and I think you've got to have some kind of exposure to that sector because it's one of the biggest trends around. And I'm very happy with the sectors I'm in by missing the EV, which I think is the biggest trend. It's going to be around for a long time, so.
Look at Tesla shares. I mean, they've moonshotted, haven't they? Associated with the technology. It's actually, what's quite interesting, it isn't so much the cars that investors are getting, excited about. It's actually the data that comes off it. And traffic and Tesla's so far ahead in terms of data mining and understanding all of that. They reckon it's going to become the next Google because of the data, which is just frankly incredible.
Exactly. Mark, anything else with channel?
I'm getting more boring stocks. I'll try and sort of put a bit more spice next week into some of my updates.
Yeah, you've got a decent chunk of money, right? So you can play boring but for people, but you can, man. And as you make more money, you can play more boring and be less, less take on less risk and get a lower return because, of course, you've got a decent chunk of money. But the average investor starting out, they need to take on a bit of risk to try and double or triple their money to get enough capital to sort of get to the boring side. But I dabbled with bigger stocks, but I got bored of them. And I thought, I've got to be excited about the business I invest in. Otherwise, There's no point me investing in them, really, you know.
Yeah, so well, I mean, I think the point is that you've done really well out of the strategy that you adopt, and it's horses for courses. What you shouldn't do is, as investors, just go for microcaps, not really understanding what it is, get caught by the liquidity trap, they go bust, and effectively you lose. And I've seen it many a time, 50, 90% of all your money, your portfolio, because they all go down at the same time. So, you know, you've got to have a fair risk tolerance if you want to basically adopt that sort of strategy.
No, I'd say if you're going for microcaps, look at three things. First of all, is the company funded? If they're pre-revenue or something like that, are they funded until the next value generation point where they'll be really news-driven? Secondly, make sure the share price hasn't spiked up in some way, because if you buy a spike, it can come back down and you can lose 50% overnight. And that's what people do. Companies become more interesting the more the share price goes up with microcap stocks, but that's not when to buy them. That's the opposite of when you buy them. And thirdly, is it sitting on a big trend? You know, like I say, if it's something that's the trend is basically going down in the next 5 years, all you're going to be doing is if you buy dips, you're buying a downtrend all the time. So if you know that it's going to be that sector is going to get stronger, whatever, over the next 5 years, then you're sort of sitting, you know, riding a wave a little bit. So those three things I'd say look at, you know, funding, the share price actually makes sure it hasn't spiked, and the trend, the theme, you know.
And also whether it's actually got anything in that theme, because there's a lot of small caps who claim to have a lot of things, but frankly have got no USP. So kick the tires on the company before you actually bet into the theme, because they may not have any real seat at the table for that whole trend.
Yeah, true. I mean, that EV stock I'm looking at right now, they are sort of pioneers in an area, and I'm asking around, looking at videos and seeing if they are real pioneers, because if they are, it's phenomenal. But I still see them very overpriced, and the potential and the hype has really got the stock. And I want that hot air to come out of it, because it's way overvalued. But then again, if everything's EV in a couple of years' time, it's not overvalued. You know, it's like, so there we are. You don't know how hot these stocks can get. Like I said, Tesla is a prime example. Anyway, marvellous, Paul. Thanks for that.
And, thanks, Justin. I look forward in hearing what you say with regards to that EV stock.
It's going to be about a couple of, hopefully, 2 or 3 months before it even cools down, because it's, you know, but...
If you come out with a boring name, I'm going to really have a go at you, okay?
If you want this video, next video, by the way, to your inbox, hit that subscribe button and notification bell, which is in the corner somewhere. Until next week, cheers, Paul.
Yeah, cheers, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies. In fact, I'm going to give a variety, I think. Let's have a look. Expedia is on there, non-moving day. On the Markets on that list, top 10 most followed. Royal Dutch Shell is there, is also down 1% today. Albemarle Resources on there. Source Bio International's on the list. Vodafone, Salt Lake Potash, Tomco, Remote Modern Systems. But number one is Christos, of course, newly listed. It's up 3.72% to 111.5. All right. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it is Emotion Group, Director Shareholding. At four, Union Jack Oil, Director Dealings. At three, W Resources, Laprilla Update. At two, first commercial sale of Bait Supply Concentrate completed. And at one, it's Gfinity, which is appointed for third year by Premier League. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.